123 with Bob Simpson.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Happy Friday!
Oh, the crowd in eager anticipation of the Bay City Rollers back in London in 1975. Now, the demand to hear the Bay City Rollers with Les McKeown is still enormous. Les is the voice on all of the hits, and he's created the band Les McKeown's legendary Bay City Rollers. Les has toured the UK, Japan, Germany, Canada and the USA over the last three decades with his band, and he's still at it today in 2013, still performing to fanatical crowds. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by the legendary Les McKeown of the Bay City Rollers. Hi Les, how are you doing?
Great, good afternoon Bob.
Good afternoon to you. Well, it's great to talk to you today and thanks for taking the time out to speak to us here on Phoenix. I know you must be busy as you're about to start a 3-month tour of the UK. I counted 41 gigs in all, followed by a tour of Japan and Russia. Lots of travelling and hard work ahead. Are you looking forward to all that?
Yeah, I was built to tour. I was built to sing on tour. I've been doing it since I was 15, and I'm 57 now, so I don't know how many years that is I've been doing it, 42 years maybe, and I'm looking forward to travelling the world over the next 3 years on our tours.
Yeah, well, you and I are about the same age, and I don't know how you do it, to be honest. more on the tour later. Now, Les, you became the lead singer of the Bay City Rollers just a few days after your 18th birthday. The band had already released their first single, Keep On Dancing, which had moderate success, but they're in danger of sort of becoming a one-hit wonder. You joined and things took off, didn't they?
Yeah, I rejuvenated the lineup, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah, put fresh new blood into a sick animal. Oh. I'm only joking. No, I joined up in November, put my voice on the first single, which was called Remember, and early 1974 it went into the charts, and then we started to get on some TV shows like Cracker Jack and the Basil Brush Fuel.
Yeah.
And we really took off, and that followed up with Summer Love Sensation, which was a big hit in the summer of 74. And then the iconic Shang-A-Lang.
Oh, yes.
A real getter. I mean, it's just a brilliant song. When those chords start on that song, the whole place just erupts into a 70s extravaganza.
Yeah. So, I mean, were you surprised at the rate and the height of the success that you got so quickly?
Well, you know, the thing is I'd been dreaming about it since I was about 5 years old. I always was dreaming of being a singer in a rock and roll band, singing on stage, and, you know, just like the bands that I'd seen on the television, you know. So, it sounds conceited to say I fully expected it, but it kind of, like, fell into place into the little dreams that I had. It all fell into place, and I was overjoyed with the fact that I dreamt it and now it was real.
Sure. Well, the success was phenomenal. The Rollers transformed into an international supergroup. You notched up 9 UK top 10 hits, including 2 number ones, and your first 2 albums stayed on the album chart for a total of 99 weeks from 1974 to 76. And Bye Bye Baby, your first number one single, was the biggest selling single of 1975. Now, a lot of people dream of success like that. How did it feel to be up there?
Yeah, they don't make them like they used to, eh, Bob? Yeah, all those weeks at the top of the charts, it was fantastic. We were not only in the UK, we were like number one band in Australia, Japan, the USA, Canada, all over Germany, Holland, Switzerland, you name it. And for a period of time there, 1975, the whole world seemed to be tartan, which is another great thing we did for the Scottish tartan industry. We made tartan fashionable again, and it's remained so to this very day. I mean, mind you, punk took up our tartan usage and put it with their chains and buckles and everything, and and that's another explanation of the success of the punk, I would submit. But we just had a great time. We were those first 3 years, and that's what my tour is all about. It's a celebration of those first 3 years. It's celebrating the enormous success that the Bay City Rollers had. Not just the band, it's celebrating the fans as well. They've stayed with me all these years and they've come to my concerts. They've seen me do really bad concerts and now really good concerts.
Well, yes, indeed. As you say, the Tartan Army were phenomenal. Tartan fashion took off. You were all over the TV, newspapers and magazines, and nothing had really been seen like it since the early days of the Beatles. You were pursued by mobs of teenage girls. Did that ever get dangerous?
Mobs of teenage girls? What could be dangerous about that? We were quite concerned about their safety all the time, and the people that we hired to do our security weren't really looking after us. They were protecting them from incidental accidents, you know, running out in front of cars, getting, you know, crushed or pushed and things like that. We were very conscious of the health and safety angle, you might say, before it became law even.
Sure. Okay. So tell us, what was the secret? What do you put the success of the band down to?
I think it was the magic tartan.
Yeah.
I think it was just great. We were a carefree, scruffy little band from Edinburgh. I think people connected with us. It was a very austere time with the money in the 70s as well. There was lots of strikes going on. There was, you know, the winter of discontent. Yeah. All these kind of things were going on. And I think we were like a breath of fresh air for the kids who perhaps weren't having a great time at home. Who knows? But it just was... It was just like, it just alleviated everything, and it was like a joy to be a roller fan for a period of time, and we sort of had these really catchy tunes, and they were great songs written by Phil Coulter and Bill Martin. They were great tunes, and they still work their magic today when we play festivals.
Sure.
We can see that there's a whole bunch of young kids doing pogo dancing to our songs and all sorts of things.
Right.
So they still have the ability to catch the young mind, and because of the songs were, you know, engineered that way, you might call it.
Sure. Now you mentioned you made it big in America, along with mainland Europe, Japan and Australia, and with worldwide album sales estimated at over 300 million and all the merchandising, you should have all become very rich men, but it didn't really work out that way, did it? What happened, Les?
Well, it certainly deepened my character. If you gave me a lot of riches there, I'm not so sure if I welcomed all those riches.
Right, okay.
But, you know, it's sad that there was a lot of, in many a business, in small businesses, in fact, even in the consumer level, people get, you know, someone comes to do their double glazing and they get ripped off. Someone, you know, a plumber wants to do, replace a gas center boiler and they get ripped off. There's so many people get ripped off in this country. I wish there was a law against it.
Yeah.
And, of course, in a bigger scale like the Bay City Rollers, millions and millions and millions of pounds and dollars, yen and Canadian dollars, all those money was more or less thieved by friends of the manager and the manager himself. But a whole bunch of the biggest pot was just not paid to us by our old record company. And that's why we're in court these days in the Southern District in the New York Court of Manhattan.
Yep.
And our lawyers are fighting tooth and nail to get the money paid to the boys, Eric, Woody, Alan, Derek and Les, and we're hoping that that's going to happen pretty soon.
Yes, I did see something about that you're hoping a settlement could be reached very soon.
Well, happy days could be here soon.
Yeah, well, good luck. Let's hope so. So what advice would you give to anyone starting out in the business today?
God, go to school and get a proper job.
I mean, would you recommend sort of the X Factor line?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's a great way to be exposed all at once to the whole of the country. God, you know, there's people that would give the right arm to have that kind of publicity.
Sure, yeah.
I would love that kind of publicity too, you know, for my tour coming up and things like that. But it's certainly a quick way to expose your talent to the whole country, and people can then decide whether or not you've got it or they think you're good enough and stuff like that. So I wouldn't put it down as a method of how to get into the business, but I do wonder, I don't know anything about the business relationships that the people who control that program.
Yeah.
I'm sure all those young, talented people are under some kind of contract before we even see them on the stage, and probably tied up for years into contracts that may or may not be lucrative for them. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come on to your tour in a minute, but from what I've read, the final days of the original Rollers were not a happy time for you. Infighting in the band, and you got to the stage where you wanted to get out, and it all came to a head one night on stage in Japan when the tension exploded and there was a massive fight on stage between the band. What do you remember about that night, and was that the final straw for you?
Well, you know that Japan, it's a very violent country. You know, we were just all caught up in our own success, and it really got to us individually and collectively, and I suppose we had irrevocable indifferences to what we wanted to do together. So, yeah, it did end up in a physical fight, and we did end up being divorced, you might call it.
Yeah.
A public divorce, and being young, full of testosterone and all that stuff, no one wanted to admit that they were wrong. No one held out any olive branches. Nobody tried to put out the fire on the bridge, you know.
Sure.
And so we drifted, well, not drifted, we departed sort of quite bitterly. And over the years, it's been practically, you know, impossible to try and get back together. But there are moves afoot, I'm pleased to say, to for us all to be able to end up at the end of this 40 years, maybe as friends again. So I'm hoping that that is going to take root, and that everyone is going to keep on the direction that they're on, and we could end up being good friends again.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, you left the Bay City Rollers in 1979, and you formed the band Ego Trip. And again, you were overwhelmingly successful in Japan, Germany, and sold millions of records. You replaced the tartan gear with spandex catsuits, and soon found yourselves playing sold-out concerts all over Japan. You released 6 albums and 7 singles. They seem to love you in Japan. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's the spandex, man. I just went into, I suppose, a creative overdrive. When I was in the Rollers, I was disallowed. I wasn't allowed to have any of my songs on the basic Rollers records. I was the singer. I got all the attention, and they had this idea that Woody and Eric would be the next John Lennon and Paul McCartney type thing. And I got more and more frustrated about that, and you know, by the time I decided to leave and make my own album, it was full of songs that some of them could have been on the Rollers album. They just wouldn't have it, and one thing led to another. So the only way I was able to expand or explore my creativity was outside of the Rollers. It was a big, bold, courageous move. In one way, I'm really sorry that it had to be either or, because these days, of course, people or singers or parts of bands can go out and have their own career and be in a band, which is the kind of way it could have been with me. Or the guys just could have recorded some of my songs. So it was a very kind of, I'm not possessive kind of relationship. And when I left and I made my albums in the Cog Studios here, the King Studios in London and in Tottenham Hill, I made 3 of them in that studios, and had a really great band. I called them Les McCune's Ego Trip, just because I was, I just amazed to have these kind of musicians play with me and get on the road with me. And I designed all the costumes, designed the album covers. So I went into a kind of, you know, creative overdrive, producing, writing, creating, all the things that were associated with my career, because all those things I wasn't able to do in the Rollers. So it was kind of like, you know, a complete reaction to being stifled, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as well as great success, you've had more than your fair share of adversity in life. It's been publicised that, you know, you've had various personal problems and bad things happen to you, basically, and you kind of hit rock bottom a few years ago, didn't you? But you seem to be in a much better place now. What brought you out of that?
Yeah, why is that bad things keep happening to
I think it's called...
Bad things don't just happen to me and don't just happen to famous footballers and pop stars. Bad things happen or have the potential to happen to just about anyone.
Yeah.
And it's very sad when it does, because it can take, you know, perfectly well-adjusted individuals and turn them into self-destructive, you know, horrible people.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me. I kind of went through a very, very dark period. I really don't know what brought it on. I don't think it was something that suddenly came on. I think it was years of perhaps having too much stimulation when I was 18 to 22. And then I had my own career from 22 to 26.
Yeah.
And then after that, you were kind of like, you know, you were like, it was over.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And trying to get used to not being number one or the page in everybody's on the front cover of every newspaper. Although it was, you know, you wouldn't like to admit it, that sort of had probably a deep psychological effect.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure, yeah.
But it's not something that you're fully aware of. You're just kind of reacting to it in a subconscious level. And that subconscious, this is according to my psychotherapist, is eats away at your feeling of self-worth and your self-esteem and stuff like this. And I suppose the tipping point came for me when I lost two rocks in my life, my mum and dad.
Right.
I was very, very close with. And when I lost them, it sort of triggered a kind of catastrophic event in my life, which I ended up just overdoing everything, all kinds of narcotics, all kinds of alcohol. And according to my rehab period in rehab, which I did later on, 4 months, I was very close to dying and very close to committing my own slow, miserable suicide.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy that I went to, I'm so grateful to my wife and my son as well for helping me to get the kind of help that I needed and to get me with the right kind of care, residential care, for 4 months in late 2008. And I was able to deal with all the problems that I'd built up over the years and come out the other side, well-adjusted, normal kind of pop star.
Well, you sound on great form now, and it's great to hear you like that.
Yeah, I must say as well, the fans have been great. I mean, I know that it's kind of, they don't have any direct effect, you know, as a personal everyday thing, but the kind of letters and emails that people send to me are very personal and private kind of things they would share with me. And it turns out there's a lot of people that I know or I helped during my younger years who I had no idea that had been going through similar things to what I had been going through. So there was a whole new kind of connection as well with the fans, and we're all grown up, and I realised that it doesn't just happen to people who are famous, it happens to us all.
Absolutely. Well, as I say, great to hear you on good form. What about your fellow rollers? Are you in touch with them these days?
You mean my rollers or my own?
Well, the guys in the band, yeah, originally, yeah.
All right, well, Eric's still working. He's doing his solo, he's into playing his acoustic guitar and practicing his own songs and exploring his own songs. And quite a lot of them seem to be a folk-type genre at the moment. And I see bits and pieces of him on the YouTube and things every now and again.
Yeah.
Stuart Woody Wood, he's got a little production studio up in Edinburgh, and he produces mixes and stuff like that and writes for little bands who win competitions and stuff like that. Like, for instance, the McDonald Brothers, who won one of these, maybe it wasn't X Factor, maybe it was Britain's Got Talent,
okay,
or something, number second.
Yeah.
So he's doing his thing there. Alan Longmuir's still very much alive and happy guy up there in Bannockburn, and his brother Derek, who's been a cardiology nurse for the last 23 years, working in the Royal Infirmary in Edinburgh.
Yeah, he really turned his back on showbiz, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, now, you've actually answered them already, but I've got a couple of questions from listeners for you, Les. Do you mind answering them? All right. Anne Burke said, my favourite memory was going to the school disco in my tartan trousers and watching the Rollers on Top of the Pops. Good times. I would ask Les if a reunion was possible. Well, you've almost answered that already, haven't you? So,
Yeah, I would dearly like I'm working very hard at the moment to try and put in extra efforts, because it doesn't seem like there's anyone doing anything in that line. There's not a manager who's trying to get people together. There's not a third party who's going and knocking on Eric's door and talking with him, or Woody's door. So
right.
I've elected myself to be that individual to
good.
Try and see if I can make extra efforts to rebuild the bridges and to hopefully get everyone together for, let's hope, some kind of tour. Even if it's not a tour, even if it's just we were friends again, it would be.
Yeah, it would be great, yeah. Jenny Charles asks, how did you come up with the name of the Bay City Rollers?
Oh, nice question, Jenny. I didn't personally come up with them, but the story is that back in 1969, when the Bay City Rollers were actually called the Saxons, Alan and Derek got together and were talking about changing the name. They wanted to change that name to an American-sounding name, because that was all the rage at the end of the 60s. They took a map of America, and they actually threw darts at that map. Hopefully, it was going to land on a groovy-sounding name. Like, it could have been the New York Rollers or something. They had the Rollers.
Yep.
But they were throwing darts, and one of them landed on Stinking Creek, Arkansas, which didn't really go well. And another one landed on Bay City in Michigan, and they were, Bay City Rollers. And so that's how it was made, purely through luck, really.
Great story. Right. And Joanne Wheeler says, and again, you've already answered this, really, but she said, I've still got all the LPs. OK, what happened to Woody? Well, you've told us what Woody's doing.
yeah, Woody's still alive and doing his thing. Him and his wife stay up in Edinburgh. He's very much a studio guy. I don't think he plays much live at all.
Right.
But maybe we can change that.
Yeah, great. Okay, one final question, and it's a cheeky one, and I know the answer to this one already, but Anne Robinson said, if it's not too cheeky a question, did they play all their own instruments?
Is that Anne Robinson from that TV show?
No, it's a it's a lady of the same name.
Yeah, the Bay City Rollers all played their own instruments.
I know.
I know why that question exists in people, and it's maybe hard for them to understand it. In the period of time that we're talking about, the early 70s, hardly any band would be allowed to play on their own records because of the huge cost of studios in those days. It could be a couple of £1,000 per day. Back in those days, that was a lot of money. It still is a lot of money.
Sure.
And the producers, the songwriters and the publishers would get together to make that particular event as inexpensive as possible. And they would hire in the very best session studio guys that they could.
Yeah.
So that, let's say, on the course of one day, maybe 8 songs could be recorded. Which, of course, if it was given to the band, that probably would be maybe 1 song a day, if you were lucky. Because we just weren't as confident as these super-duper, super-cool musicians.
Yeah.
We could play. All the guys played since 1967, and they got better over the years. And you can hear it on their album from the B-side of Roland. You can hear the difference in their playing from the B-side of the Roland album to the next album, Once Upon a Star, where they played everything on the album. And I think, on a certain level, I think it's actually better than some of the stuff that's on the first album. And that was a natural progression.
Sure.
Of course, the guys were very proud from how they played, what they played, and of course we played a lot of live stuff as well.
Great. Okay, thanks, Les. Now, back to your forthcoming tour. It all kicks off next Friday. How does touring these days compare to the 70s?
It's a lot harder.
Really? Is that an age thing? Or?
No, it was a lot harder when I was younger.
Oh, I see. Sorry, yeah.
We had of course, I had youth on my side then.
Yeah.
I think I get excited shortly before I go on stage. And it does, the adrenaline still gets into the old bones and gets me excited. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's some another kind of maybe that is my main addiction throughout my life is going on stage and just being able to sing the songs that I love to sing.
Yeah, lovely. Now, I know that you guys in the band, you're still in Tarleton, aren't you? How about the fans? Do they turn up in Tarleton still?
They do. They show the respect to the old rollers and the fact that we come from Scotland and that we, at one time in our youth, we all helped to turn the world tartan together.
Yeah.
They were known as the Tartan Army. We were the basic rollers, and we were inseparable.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're coming to our part of the world a few times in the coming months, starting with the Chelmsford Civic Theatre on Sunday the 15th of September. Tell us about the show, Les.
Well, the show is called the Basic Roller Show, albeit it's Les McCune's Basic Roller Show, and it really is. We've been taking all the songs apart and putting them back together again, finding what made them tick. Exactly, trying to recreate the harmonies. They're a very important part of the Basic Roller songs. And something that perhaps we didn't pay a full attention to before. So we've really worked hard to get the harmonies note perfect and all the parts really good so that it sounds more like the record than we've ever sounded before.
Right.
And so there's a lot of work went in the production side of it. Of course, the stories revolve around... I used to have a script that I would stick to every night. Excuse me, I think I'm catching a cold.
Oh dear! Oh no!
And we would, you know, tell the stories. For instance, how the Basic Rollers got their name, and some funny things that happened backstage with the old guys and stuff. These days, I still do that, but there's a room in the set for, let's say, something untoward or might happen, or some unusual thing might happen in the audience. Someone might even shout up a request or a song that, you know, anything could happen, basically. We have a structure for the show. We have a set list.
Yep.
But I've got my 1 or 2 minutes in between songs that I can decide what's happening. I'm the maestro. I'm the conductor. So.
Absolutely. You'll also be back in our patch on Tuesday the 24th of September at the Orchard Theatre, Dartford. Then Saturday the 12th of October, it's the Harlow Playhouse, followed by the Thameside Theatre in Grays on Friday the 18th of October. The UK tour continues until the end of November. Then you're off to Japan for some dates in December. And then it's on to Russia, I think. I expect you'll be looking forward to a peaceful Christmas after all that lot, won't you?
Well, I'm talking right now with a New Zealand and Australian promoter about taking us from Japan to New Zealand.
Wow.
And then on to Australia and coming back to the UK for the second week in January. Have 2 weeks off and then we're off for a month in America.
Excellent. And on top of that, I hear you've been working on a new album. How's that coming along?
Oh, it's coming along. Oh, that leaps and bounds, that is. That's really great. Well, we're hoping to sign the final deal with the American record company over the coming months. So I hope that we'll be playing one song each night from the new album.
Right.
So we will revolve around the 12 tracks during the tour.
Great stuff. Well, it's been fantastic to talk to you today, Les. Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Well, you've brightened my day. It's been a bit of a miserable day.
Yes, it is horrible out there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at least my tomato plants are getting some water.
Great stuff. Just tell me, before you go, have you got a website we can look you up on?
Oh, yeah, you can look me up, lesmcewan.com, or you can put in baycityroller, without the S, .com. BasicRoller.com, or just Google Les McCune Tour and it'll come up. I'm on all the best websites.
Oh,
here.
I'm sure. I've much enjoyed talking to you today, Les. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being on Phoenix FM with me today.
Oh, great. Great to be on Phoenix FM with you, Ben.
Oh, thank you so much. Right, thanks. We're going to play out with Shang-a-Lang. See ya.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
This is Phoenix 98 FM. 98 FM.